My name is Chido Dinoshikiwe, and I'm going to be sharing about bridging the language gap with AI. But I'm also going to be sharing a little bit about my story because I think it's quite important, especially for us as Zimbabweans, and looking at how we're going to be building in this future of the fourth industrial revolution. I'll also likely move around, so I'll do that. So that is me, cute little me. And that picture is very pivotal for my journey. That picture was taken in grade four. My second year of grade four, because I had to repeat grade four. My parents are entrepreneurs and they were born and raised in Zimbabwe, but they moved our family to South Africa. And when that happened, I wasn't so good at English. Because of that, my teacher could see, you are not going to get very far if I push you through the education system, knowing that you've got gaps in your language. So I had to repeat grade four, and that's where the journey of my business came through. But before I get there, I want to share a little bit about my passion. Where is the clicker? There. My passion for this beautiful country of mine, my home country. The first thing that I did in Zimbabwe in 2018 was I started a youth organization called the Zimbabwe Entrepreneurs Youth Foundation, a mouthful. And we hosted our first conference at the University of Zimbabwe. That was like the interview that ZTD was doing. I don't know if it ever aired, but it was a big moment for me. And after that, I then started my first startup in this country. It was called Uplan. And what we did at Uplan is that we listed all the venues across the country and we allowed people to book venues online. So for the next Ideas Festival, you would have come to Uplan, found a venue in another part of the country, and booked through that. It was extremely difficult to build that company in this country, primarily because just tech hasn't advanced as much as we wanted to advance our innovation. When that didn't really work out, I'd managed to build a network of entrepreneurs in this country. So I started an organization called Akai. It's supposed to be Lakai, but without the V. And at Akai, what we do is it's a business support organization for entrepreneurs in Zim. Some of them are in the room here. And we host quarterly meetups. We've invested in some startups in the ecosystem. We connect them to different opportunities across different markets. And yeah, that's one of our meetups that we had in Harare a few quarters back. So getting into the world of AI and what I do on a day-to-day basis. At Vambo AI, we train models to understand African languages. And that's pretty much what the world of AI is. With AI, you're teaching a computer and a machine to do what humans can do. So you're teaching it to see, perceive, to listen, to speak, to learn, and to be able to give you more solutions based on the information that you feed it. So take, for example, a child. When you obviously have your child, you want to raise them in a certain way. So you're going to give them certain bits of information, which is our inputs, our data. I'm sure all of you have engaged with children from other households. Maybe when they come to your house and you can see, again, this behavior, it doesn't really fit me. Or, oh my gosh, this child has really good mannerisms that I'd want to give to my child. That's the process of fine-tuning and reinforcement learning, where we start taking elements from other models and other performances to put them into our models. So in the AI spectrum and where Africa fits in, this is the most simplistic way that I can explain it. There's artificial narrow intelligence. With artificial narrow intelligence, it's when you're teaching a machine to pretty much do one task only. So to translate, or to be able to predict certain things based on its data, or to be able to automate your emails once they come in. That's artificial narrow intelligence. Then there's generative AI, which is what's booming at the moment. Your ChatGPTs, your Claudes, your Groks. And that's when companies build a large language model, a huge foundation of information and knowledge. And from there, you can create more information. So you can create essays, you can create images, you can create music, you can create pretty much anything that that model is trained on. Then we've got artificial general intelligence. And that is the scary part of AI, where everyone's like, if AI now can do everything, will it not take over? Will it not grow a mind of its own? And then we lose control of the world. We are very, very, very far away from there. And hopefully I can explain to you why during this session. So with where we are in the world, we are on artificial narrow intelligence and on generative AI. But where we are with Africa is that we're mostly around artificial narrow intelligence. But what we're doing is we're importing these narrow solutions.
When we do that, it means that these solutions don't represent us. They don't speak our languages. They were not trained on our data. They don't know who we are. They don't know our values. They don't know our aspirations. They don't know our laws. They don't know anything about Africans. And we know that Africa is a huge continent. It's not a country. So if it doesn't know about the continent, what more about you, a Zimbabwean, a father, an aspiring banker? It knows nothing about you. The African AI opportunity has the potential to reach $1.3 trillion by 2030. This is just in the next 5 years. But at the moment, we are not going to be able to tap into that because we are just AI consumers. When we now start investing in that artificial narrow intelligence pillar and the Gen AI pillar, we'll move ourselves as Africans from being consumers to also being creators of AI and then being able to lead in the age of AI. Now, you may be asking me, but you know, this thing is expensive. How are we going to lead in AI? Let me tell you a few examples of how Zimbabwe can actually lead in the age of AI. So, again, going back to artificial narrow intelligence, and I'm focusing on that particularly for this discussion. As I mentioned, artificial narrow intelligence is when you teach an AI model to do one thing. When you're teaching it to do one thing, you're pretty much making it a specialist in that subject matter, in that area. And if we think of Zimbabwe, what are we specialists in? The first thing that came to mind when I was praying for this is mining. There is no country that has as many diversified minerals as Zimbabwe does. Research says we have between 40 and 63 diversified minerals within this country alone. That means data. That means we know more about these minerals than anybody else. How they grow, how they can be mined, how they can be used, the industries that can grow from them, the opportunities, the places where they can be sold, the marketplaces, pricing on them, and so, so much more. So for us, what does that look like? The input for AI is data. Where is our data sitting in mining? If we don't have access to it, we can actually create it. We've got over 16 million Zimbabweans, high unemployment. Get our youth to go out to the mines and literally just take pictures with their Android and iPhone devices, and you now have a data set that the whole world wants. Remember, the most funded economies are chasing that, artificial general intelligence. They will not reach it if they don't know what the world's gold deposits look like, what platinum, what the opportunities for platinum are, and so on and so forth. Another opportunity for Zimbabwe is that Zimbabwe is only one of 16 African countries that's landlocked. Again, what are the trade dynamics around that? What are the population dynamics around that? And so many more things. Another area is our migration, actually, something that may be seen as a negative thing. When you look at Africa again, Zimbabwe has the highest immigration statistic of all African countries. Only between 6 to 8% of Nigerians live in the diaspora, and 30% of Zimbabweans live in the diaspora. Again, that's a data goldmine, remittances, dynamics of migration, how our passport security works. These are all things that, again, Zimbabwe is uniquely positioned to lead on in the world of AI. And in the world of AI, the way to make money is to license this data. Again, they're chasing general intelligence. We have data that they don't have. Think about that. Okay, so about what we do with languages. So as I mentioned earlier, I had to repeat grade 4, and that was a very traumatic experience for me, bullied a lot, but we survived. And after I finished university, I took a gap year, and I was just thinking of what to do. And that experience came back to me, where I was like, okay, I had to repeat this grade, but why? And was I the only one, or are there other children who are facing a similar issue? When I did that research, I actually saw that only 13% of Africans are fluent in English, which means that our economies, our education systems, which are in English, are excluding over 80% of the continent's population. That's a huge problem. It means these people can't contribute, they can't express themselves adequately unless they are accommodated in their mother tongue, of which we know it's quite difficult to accommodate everyone in their mother tongue. When you look at the internet and how generative AI was built, it was built by taking content from the internet. 60% of that content was in English. 14% of that content was in Chinese. Spanish was about 5%. Other languages in the world made up about 20%. African languages, over 2,000, are less than 1% of the internet. When we go back to narrow intelligence, it means that African language data is not represented on the internet, which means those people over there who are trying to represent the whole world and take over don't have what we have. So we decided to build and invest in that. So at Vambo AI, this is my beautiful team. I had to put a picture of them, except for my co-founder. He wasn't around, but devs are always all over the place. But at Vambo AI, our mission is to ensure that we create AI that understands all of Africa's languages. We've trained 200 languages so far and have managed to validate and test over 60 of them, which means that if you go on our platform today, you can use those 60 because I can give you 100% to say they're working. The other 200 are still under testing. And what this platform can do is it can translate, transcribe, write, search, and give people API access. So if you now have a bank or a platform or an app like some of the innovators, and you want it to be multilingual, you don't have to actually build anything new. You just come to us, we give you an API key, which is less than a sentence, and you immediately have all the languages, which means that you may be starting your business in Zimbabwe, but if you're like, there's something happening in Kenya, you literally can just turn on Kiswahili, and now you've expanded into another country on the continent. These are the languages that we've got that are validated. You see the Southern African languages, East African, West African, and then North African. We've also trained it for languages of the world because we've got a lot of international guests and visitors that are living and working across the continent. So I wanted to briefly just take you through some of the things that the platform does. If you are looking at building an AI native company like ours or something to do with AI, these are some of the things that you need to look for. So the first one is data collection. As I mentioned, our key input for AI is data. So if you don't know how you're collecting your data or you don't have a clear data pipeline, you're pretty much wasting your time. You are going to run out of your resources before you've actually optimized and created a model that can work and one that you can again license and give to others, companies. So our data collection tool is for text and audio data. We give this to over 100 validators across the continent, and they've got access to this tool, which we built ourselves. And what they do pretty much is we'll give them a mandate and be like, look, we've got a client, like the World Health Organization is one of our clients, who'll be like, they want data on like body parts in Hausa or something. So we'll give our data collectors in Nigeria that brief. They go around with this and they can type or they can speak and they'll be like, arm means this, flu is this. And then we use that data to further train our models and make it proficient in that subject matter. For us as a company, we try to get the languages at a conversational level. But again, if a client then comes in like, I want something specific for financial services, I want something specific for this, then we just do data collection on that. The next thing is what our platform pretty much looks like. So on our platform, you can go on and actually pick the languages that you're interested in, because a lot of us are actually tied to multiple languages. So perhaps like for me, I would have Shona, Kiswahili, I'm between like Kenya and Zim and Joburg right now, isiZulu because I'm in South Africa, and then French because we've got a big Francophone Africa client base as well, and I kind of need to know what's going on. So I'd pick those languages, and that means that those are my default languages for the AI. And then, there's like the search component, again, very similar to ChatGPT. And we designed it this way so that it can be easier to onboard clients. So one thing with building an AI native solution on the continent is that you're not just building a new solution. You also have to figure out go-to-market and customer adoption for your Africans. A lot of people are not yet comfortable with the concept of AI, but they're comfortable with the concept of ChatGPT. I know it doesn't make sense. So if you align your product to that, it makes it easier to onboard them. Like, oh, you were searching for that thing on ChatGPT. Now come do it in Shona. And then we're able to get users through that. Then the second part is writing. So a lot of African languages are actually spoken, not written. But we've got a lot of documented information that still needs to be translated. And again, still needs to be communicated in written form, like constitutions, policies, and so on and so forth. So this came because we actually did a project with the government of Kenya last year when they had the Mandamanos, the protests around the finance bill. And the finance bill, again, was a huge public outcry, but they needed to translate it into local languages, not just Kiswahili. So when we saw that that was something that someone wanted to do, again, we don't want to be doing the manual work. You just come on to Vambo AI. You click what you want to write or translate. It can be a policy brief. It can be a love letter. It can be an essay, whatever you want it to be. And then, you pick who you're writing to. So some languages like Amharic are gendered. There's a way to speak to men and there's a way to speak to women. Some other languages like Shoshona have respect. There's a way to speak to young people. There's a way to speak to older people and so on and so forth. So you pick all those nuances and then you're able to come out with an output that is relevant for your audience. Then there's the translation tool where, again, maybe you're reading something on Twitter. Maybe it's on Nigeria Twitter. You pick the sentence, you can put it in here, and then you can actually get what the translation is. We are working on code switching. So this year, our major focus has been on building our code switching databases. Code switching is when people use multiple languages in the same sentence. So it can be English, Shona and Ndebele in the same sentence. AI doesn't know how to do that. We need to train it to understand the context and be able to give the right meaning. And then my favorite is transcription because I love voice. And again, someone can record something and then it can be transcribed into text, or they can upload a file, can be transcribed into text. We are not yet at speech to speech, which means if I'm speaking now, you can't hear me in another language in real time, but that hopefully is coming next year. So, yeah. Again, these are just some of the projects we've done. We work with farmers, we work with students, work with entrepreneurs from across the world, work with healthcare workers and professionals. Pretty much anywhere where someone needs to communicate and speak with a multilingual audience, we able to assist them and work with them in that way. And and then I think I wanted to just end with a call to action because we've got people who wear many, many hats in this room. And yes, this is obviously on a continental level, but really just thinking about Zimbabwe and the massive potential there is for AI in this country. Governments need to make our publicly accessible data available. And there are many ways to do this by anonymizing the data. We don't need to know who had the health issue, who defaulted on their loan. But if we're able to get those patterns, we can actually create really powerful models that can empower our economies and our ecosystems. Corporates should adopt local AI solutions and tools. The more that corporates do this, they are now able to understand how their AI flow is going to work. I know a lot of corporates are really struggling with their AI strategy. How do they include AI? How do they build their own AI? They've got a lot of data. Is it even useful? Working with companies like us who are already in the space of innovation, who are building on a day-to-day basis, is what's going to get you to those answers quicker. University, we partner with universities across the continent. Universities are a really great tool and place for data collection as well as data validation. And again, you're empowering the next generation to understand the world of AI from the roots. And then creators, anyone who wants to create something. One of my favorite stories about a user that we had was a parent in South Africa who is from a bilingual household. So she speaks isiZulu, her husband is Setswana, and they wanted to teach their child both languages, but it can get quite tricky. So they used our platform to create storybooks every night for their child. There'll be one storybook in isiZulu and one in Setswana. And through that, she was able to, I guess, you know, improve her child's learning of the language. We would have never thought of that use case, but because it was something personal to her, and she now had a tool that she could use to do that, it was something that she could create in a matter of seconds. So I really, really encourage us to not be fearful of AI. The opportunity in AI is even bigger than we can ever imagine. And again, you don't need to be in Silicon Valley. You don't need to be outside of this beautiful country. Even within its borders, we have so much potential to actually contribute and lead in the world of AI. So please scan my code and connect with me on all the platforms that are on there. I would be really happy to even just speak with you if you've got some ideas and just want to brainstorm. I'm looking forward to the conversation with Trevor soon. Thank you.
This is mind blowing to a 63-year-old who was using ChatGPT to write emails. This is another front altogether. Talk to us about the business model.
Mm.
How is your business funded?
Yeah.
And how do you sustain the business going forward?
That's a very good question. So our business started by us bootstrapping. We just had an idea and wanted to build something. We won a grant of 20,000 Rand, just over $1,000 at the time. And then we used that to build a model for 4 languages. And then by doing that, we were entering pitch competitions, joining, applying for grants. And so far we've raised over $300,000 equity free. We're currently still fundraising. In terms of the business model, so we'd started with the B2C business model where we'd try to get individuals to pay for the tool. And we did this because we had over 17,000 users in our first 6 months of launching the platform. But Africans are not yet ready to be paying for tools like this. So we had to quickly change that before we ran out of money. And we work on a B2B business model now, which means that we work with other companies, organizations, NGOs, like I mentioned, who already have a multilingual mandate and they just need that type of tool. We license the tool to them, or sometimes we do various localization projects. And yeah, so far that's been working out quite well.
Are you a corporate or?
Yes, we're a private company.
You're a private company.
Yes.
What capital do you need to scale to your ambitions?
Yes, so at the moment
we're talking of 2,000 African languages and only 1% of them being on the internet. Clearly, there's a lot of work for you to be in that space.
Yes, there's a lot of work. So at the moment, we're raising our pre-seed of $2 million, but the total amount to be invested in this type of space to be able to reach even about 1,000 would be between about $10 to $15 million.
And the deployment of that capital, is it on hardware? Where do you deploy that capital?
So it's mostly on data collection and kind of the technical expertise to train the models accurately and then to host them on the cloud. The reason that's a really important thing is because we are putting multiple African languages with different dynamics together. So our first model were for Bantu languages in Southern and East Africa. We then added Amharic from Ethiopia and it completely broke our model and we had to restart that process again. So yes, we've learned a lot, but we also don't know what we'll find along the way as we add more languages.
My understanding is that AI's consumption of power is huge. It's massive. So the question there is, how are you preparing for that as this grows? And then secondly, Africa doesn't have that many data centers as far as I know, except for maybe South Africa and Kenya.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect your business model?
Yes. So at the moment, we are having to outsource our power utility abroad. So we work with partners in Europe and in the US. Ethically for us, we would want to host our models on the continent to keep the data on the continent. But until we've got that resourcing, we won't be able to do so. And in terms of the data centers, we have partnered with Cassava AI in order to give us that compute power. And I think that's going to be quite an exciting development because it will mean that not only can we keep our data, African data on the continent, but we can then also now empower other AI innovators who need the same type of compute power to use that infrastructure.
Are you seeing that infrastructure as a hindrance or as an opportunity going forward in terms of building data centers on the continent and being able to have your stuff on the cloud and being able to have the power that you require to run these models?
No, it's a massive opportunity. Again, we haven't even scratched the surface of AI solutions on the continent. So just imagine in about 3 to 5 years' time when we've got thousands more AI solutions that are meeting specific needs, they all need to be hosted somewhere. And again, instead of then giving our hard-earned money to the West, like always do, we would like to be able to keep it here. So data centers is something that's extremely needed.
Where are you registered? And this valuation, when you're raising your $2 million, what valuation does that give you?
So we're registered in Delaware in the US, like all African tech startups are. And then we've got a company in South Africa and one in Kenya. I think those would be the only African entities that we have. Then in terms of our valuation, that's kind of still for negotiation. The round is still open. So, yeah.
It's still confidential information because there's somebody with about 2 million in the crowd, in the audience there that might want to throw it in. Guys, this is absolutely exciting. This is cutting edge stuff. Let's give another round of applause.
Thank you.
Our own 28-year-old girl, doing amazing stuff. So proud of you. Do we have questions for Chido? Let me try somebody who hasn't spoken. Questions for Chido, if you haven't asked a question before. You haven't yet.
Thank you very much, Chido, for that insightful presentation. Interesting work. I'm also into AI. I do some projects on AI as well, and I've done some work on local languages. So far, we had 6. But I wanted to understand, as Bambo AI, what safeguards have you put in place to prevent maybe the erasure of cultural identity as AI models standardize dialects?
That's a very good question. So again, everything comes to the data collection process because that's what your input is. Whenever we send a mandate out to collect data, we have to ensure that it's representing as many people in that culture. So children are included, women, men, people in the diaspora, people who this is their second language. We try to have, that type of representation. And then we also don't just collect like word pairs and data for training the models. We also collect indigenous knowledge. So how do you cook your staple meal? How do you farm certain things? That's actually what feeds the generative aspect of our AI. So that if someone is asking, and again, this is another really key use case, like intercultural marriages. Oh, I'm going to meet my in-laws. I don't know anything about their culture. What do I need to know? That's when that information then comes and can assist.
You have a question? There's the young man up front there.
Okay, I think you, Chido.
I can say this is the time when the old... Madala's in the house, just start checking out.
Thank you, Chido, and I think you are doing wonderful work. And I think I mentioned it yesterday when someone Nick said we have to deal with our portfolios, and I said there are a lot of creators that are already working on AI, so we need to have this conversation. But however, my question, without having to say your intellectual property, I just want to understand that on your models, do you have one model per language, or do you have one model that covers all languages?
I know we don't have one model per language. So, like I mentioned, with our niche of languages, there are certain relationships that languages have. It's easy for me to train a model in isiZulu and isiNdebele because those languages are quite similar. But I can't put, let's say, Wolof on that same model because it's got different patterns altogether. So we've got multiple small language models. And what we've also done, especially when we give the product to companies, is you can even take a regional small language model. So maybe you just know, Kuti, my business is just in Southern Africa, so I just need Setswana, isiZulu, Shona, Portuguese for Mozambique, Then you just take that small language model and it covers that. You don't need the rest of the continent. For those that then want the whole continent's languages, they take the package, but it's small language models that are put together for that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for that question. Any other question? The brother behind there. Eunice, next to you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. So I think just to add to that. So number one, we want to put Shona into AI, but we teach our kids to exclusively speak English. There's no economic impetus for our kids to learn our local languages. So how do we blend that with a policy that supports the local languages? So when you put them in AI, there's an economic value to it.
Thank you for that question.
Yeah, very good question. And we get this a lot, especially when people ask, are African languages really commercially viable? Like, who is paying for African languages? What a question. And you'd be surprised how economically viable languages are. Our first client was from India. It was a company that got a contract to expand into the African continent. And the first thing they said is we have to localize. Our second client was from America. They were expanding to another part of the continent and they wanted to localize. And once they did that, if you saw the numbers of how much they were succeeding, it was astronomical. I think it's us who doubt the commercial power of our languages. And I think it's because we also don't really take into account that in most African countries, on average, between 50 to 60% of the country is still rural. It's people that don't speak English on a day-to-day basis. English may be the language of our economies, but the language of trade on a day-to-day basis, Kutengisa Madomasi and everything, it's indigenous languages. So when we don't then invest in that, again, we're losing on that commercial ground. Now, when it comes to our children, I don't think, especially as a third culture kid myself, I don't think that responsibility should be put on the next generation to say, oh, because we didn't teach you the language, you now need to just pick it up and figure out what to do with it, because they've got their own social dynamics themselves. But I think us as a community and a society, we need to recognize and say, look, there are millions of people within our countries that will or may never get an opportunity to leave this country. AI is coming and is going to consume their lives, whether they like it or not. How do we still include them? And then also then start putting policies to say, if you're operating in Zimbabwe, you have to include Shona AI, because this is, you know, the Shona speaking country or Ndebele AI, or, you know what I mean? And I think as Africa, especially, because I feel like we are, I've been in a lot of sessions like this where we are all struggling to say, what are we doing as Africa with this world of AI? We're already behind. We don't have the engineers. We don't have the compute power. We don't have the money. But what we have is us and the millions of people in our countries. And they are going to want to come and make money off of us. So we need to make sure that we can protect ourselves and then also charge for it, because it's commercially viable.
Fascinating, isn't it? That this conversation always comes around to this, that we are the last people to recognize the value that we have as a people in our resources and who we are, in this instance, in our languages. The foreigners realize how precious our languages are, our culture is. They come and take our culture and then we start complaining. That's so interesting in the space that you are at the present moment. There's a question right at the Dr. Zoro.
Yes, thank you for that. Chido, great job. I love what you're doing. I love languages myself. I'm a Mandarin speaker and I work a lot with Chinese investors who come to this country and speak no English word and they are not bothered. I want to understand what sets, sorry, you can't see me because there's a gentleman here. What sets your application apart? I'm just still trying to figure out how it actually works. Is it like, it's an app on my phone and I'm trying to communicate like with a lady, Madomasi. And what sets it apart? Because what I've noticed of recent is the Chinese investors or players, when they come here, they've got this small device now where they just turn it on and whatever they speak, it will speak back, or I can read whatever he's saying. And if I say whatever in Shona or English, they're actually able to understand. They don't even need a phone that has data on it. As long as that little device of theirs has battery, he's actually, and whilst you're speaking, he's able to record, and there's AI, you know, in there that's actually translating as we are going through the meeting. Yeah. So I'm just trying to see what sets your technology apart from what is already being used at the moment.
Thanks, Zoe.
Thank you for that question. So for us, I mentioned when we started with B2C, we were trying to solve like problems like that, like build the app for it or build the platform. But we quickly realized that it was not going to be possible financially. So we build the infrastructure that then powers apps like that. And we are in a couple of other language learning apps that exist across the world because they're different pairs. So in Zimbabwe, it would be a Mandarin, maybe Shona Mandarin Ndebele issue. In again, West Africa, East Africa, it's Mandarin and that language. And then they use our infrastructure in order to power that.
In terms of you identified the need for governments to free up information, for corporates to use your platform, and for creatives also to create in our language. Mm-hmm. Where is the biggest heavy lifting there? I mean, I don't... Where do you see the biggest challenge where you might need to deploy resources to deal with the challenges that you face?
In terms of who will take it up?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I actually think it will likely be corporates, because I think corporates are seeing AI as a threat more than anything. So any company, small or even a competitor who gets AI quicker than them, they immediately feel like, oh no, what's going to happen with us? But again, corporates are then the biggest opportunity because we can learn faster with corporates. We can deploy solutions faster as well with corporates. It's quite easy for governments to take up the solution. They've literally have a national mandate. Language is a matter of national importance. So we've managed to kind of break some good ground with
but
that.
Will they release information to you?
So,
which is critical for building these models.
You see, with language, they don't need to. So the moment like one of the governments that we work with, they using our AI in the healthcare system because they have a lot of hospitals that serve people from different countries and communities. So they just kind of made it accessible to those people. The moment that doctor and that patient are having that interaction, we are getting that data. So we then don't need them to give us any more. It's more of an access thing. And then with the startups, they are trying things out like, I'll just give you the API and it's going to plug it in this evening and done. You know, onboarding is quite quick.
Wonderful. There's a question. Oh, sorry. A question at the back there. Yes, with you, Unique.
Okay. My name is Pride. I would like to applaud you. I think as a researcher, one of the key things that I've been facing is issues to do with running surveys to our locals because most surveys, we write them or design them in English. And maybe the question I'll pose to you, how many surveys have you answered in Shona or in Ndebele? You see, so from there, because I think one of the things that I've tried to say, let's say when I'm working with the South, design the surveys, is I'll ask maybe in ChatGPT to say, please, can you help me transcribe this into Shona or translate into Shona and Ndebele? And most of the times it will fail. And I think I have to put a blame on me because when I searched, your company came top and I have a bias to say, this is a Zimbabwean company and do you think they've done much? Then I just brushed it away. So I think from there, because now I'm sitting here now and I'm thinking I had this problem and the solution, it was there, but the trust issue from me. So I think from there now I will add on a certain question to say, in you training the models, in terms of transcribing, because you know most in terms of what we cover, it's more on social issues that were easy to translate.
Yeah.
What are issues to do with business and science? How well have you gone in training your model so that as us as business, we're trying to run these surveys, you make it simpler for asking the respondent so that we remove the doubt. Because even for me sometimes, I've as very difficult and stress translating a technical question to a layman in my local language. So how do we go about that?
Thank you very much for that question. Yes, sir.
Thank you for that question. And, you know, I really would hope that, especially from the Ideas Festival, we can trust Zimbabwean-made solutions more going forward. But when we decided to focus on the infrastructure layer of our solution, we basically made ourselves the language expert. So if you use our AI and you're like, there's no word for unicorn and I need that word in my survey, I will go and find it for you personally within 24 hours and immediately the AI will have it. So we are also making sure that even with our work with academics, we're creating these new terms. We're finding where they've been used and teaching and training the AI to use it for that. And yeah, on your question, transcription is available. Again, for over 200 languages, in Zim, we've pretty much covered every local language in this country. We covered Zimbabwe and South Africa first, and then we decided to go and spread our wings. So you can trust that it'll work for your surveys.
I think the trust question, we should throw it back at you, isn't it? it's back at us, all of us. Why don't we trust local products? Yes, I'm sure people are going to say, you know, I've been disappointed before and so forth. But I think you remember we spoke when we started about the importance of the mindset. If we don't believe in ourselves, who's going to believe in us? And I think it starts with us. for that trust to be amplified. We'll take the last question and then go to the next session. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. I've just been thinking, if I'm an investor, I give you the 2 million. How long will the money take to come back? How do you make the, like, how do you package for the users in terms of for the charges and the like? How are the numbers like?
There's a potential 2 million coming there. Be careful how you answer this one, eh?
Yes, that's a very good question. So at the moment, the fundraise we're doing was an equity fundraise, which means that you get a stake in the company. And as it grows with you. But we also have other structures. Should you want to try and get some money quicker, we can take on debt. We've got clients that, again, we can do invoice-based, debt financing. I think we've really managed to crack that B2B side of the business. And then, yeah, I think it just depends on your appetite. AI is a really, really fast game. So, yeah, it could be tomorrow. It could be never. I can't give you a definite answer on that. But yeah, happy to share more on our deck, on our financials, and have that discussion offline.
Fascinating, isn't it? The way that, I don't know if you have been following the OpenAI valuation. It's now valued at what, 500 billion? Even before making a profit and that kind of stuff. So I think that's taking the view that this thing has got legs. The runway is something else. Chido, very exciting. I mean, we could go on and on talking about this, and clearly you're on top of your game. And you've got the energy and youth is on your side. We wish you all the very best. Thank you so much. Shall we give you another round of applause?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.